Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to Captain Roy's Rusty Rocket Radio Show, the UK geek science fiction, fantasy and horror podcast, episode 512, taped on Monday, the 27th of November, 2023, at 04:40:24. Yes, that early in the morning. I was going to tape a bit earlier, just before midnight, but I was feeling absolutely buggered. Aches, pains, everything. And luckily, I did fall asleep and had a few hours of fairly decent sleep. Didn't have as good a dream as I had the other day. Oh, when was that? Oh, the 25th. Had a great dream. Tried to recapture that dream that same night when I woke up, but it didn't work. Oh well, it's nice while it lasted. I don't know if it's to do with the weather, the shortening days. It seems to be night all the time. I can't see how that would be the case, because I'm generally nocturnal anyway, so I'm used to it being dark all the time. I don't know. There's something about it being dark when it should be daylight that is a little unsettling. The evening starts in the early afternoon. And worst of all is that typically English damp chill that worms its way into our bones. You know, I've lived in other countries where it is so much more colder than this, maybe 5 to 10 times colder, but it is usually drier as well. Here it's, even though the temperature isn't that low, it's just dampish cold and that dark as well. It's no wonder we have so many ghost stories here. But what better way, clumsy segue from the show notes here, to beat the winter chill than to tuck up with a hot drink and a Garibaldi or two and join me in enjoying some geek chat. So let's talk. And God, I can't believe I wrote that down. As for the hot drink, well, I had a hot lemon to hopefully clear up my sinuses. I do have some Garibaldis. I'm not in the mood to eat them right now, but if you have them, eat them. It's like, what's that from? I remember those war comics, those comics set during the war, and whenever it was an American platoon or something, it'd be something like, if you've got them, smoke them. But don't do that. Don't do that. Enjoy a Garibaldi. I'm sitting down tonight, not standing up. I'm still recording through a Shure SM58. What else to tell you? Not that much, really. I think we're ready to go. So let me tell you about the first film that I want to talk about tonight, and that is Escape Room Tournament of Champions. Yes, this isn't the first time we've talked about Escape Room. This is a Columbia-produced Sony sequel to Escape Room 2019 that I talked about in Pod 410. My God, more than 100 episodes ago. In this sequel, Survivor and fellow survivor from the first game decide to re-enter. Well, the woman survivor decides to re-enter with her reluctant male friend from that first game. They find a game in New York. They manage to get into that game accidentally. and find out that the new game is made up of survivors from previous games, so it's all been planned. When I saw the first movie, I said that, quote, Saw plus Cube equals Escape Room. This second film was better and more memorable, if you can get past the completely insane, crazy premise that you, as an ordinary, powerless member of the public, might want to confront a huge, sadistic, super-rich international conspiracy. Yeah, sure, that's going to happen. Oh, what is wrong with these people? In Escape Room, Tournament of Champions, the traps were nasty. The beach scenario was particularly elaborate. One of the kills, well, two people were killed, but you know what I mean, the setup using literal acid rain was properly disturbing. And the plot twist at the end wasn't bad either. Oh, that acid rain scene, that was not great. I mean, it was great, but it just was very unpleasant. Was as unpleasant as the scene in The Fall of the House of Usher. Similar, but with less screaming, which made it worse, I think. And yeah, Escape Room Tournament of Champions, that's all I've got to say about that. Doesn't merit a half-hour review, just a short little review. Not because it's a bad film or anything, it's just I've got to be selective in how long these reviews are in this type of show. The multi-review show, where I talk about lots of different science fiction, fantasy and horror things, instead of one specific thing, like our revisit. Okay, enough waffle. Next movie, totally killer. This is an Amazon Prime Video 2023 horror comedy produced by Amazon, Blumhouse, and Divide/Conquer, which was also responsible for Freaky. It is directed by Nanatchka Khan and stars Kiernan Shipka. In a tin pot town, sorry America, you have a lot of those tin pot towns, so do we, so do most countries. In 1987, a killer called the Sweet 16 Killer murders three girls. And then we jump to Halloween night in the present, where a girl called Jamie returns home from a concert to find her mother murdered by the same killer. She is later chased into a time machine built by her best friend as a school project based on the work of her brilliant mother. Jamie finds herself in 1987, the time of the original Sweet 16 killer. She pretends to be an exchange student, meets her future mother, a mean girl teen, and her friends. I'm sorry, I laugh there because her mother's female friends call themselves the Mollies after Molly Ringwald. Anyway, Jamie manages to convince the Mollies and a couple of other friends to try to trap the murderer on Halloween night. The younger future mother of her best friend creates a time machine from a fairground Gravitron ride. Gravitron ride, that's that ride with the spinny thing that sticks you to the side. You go inside it, you lean back, and then it spins all over the place, sort of almost goes upside down, but you just stay there. And yeah, so she, using the Gravitron ride somehow, makes this time machine. And in there is this confrontation with a baddie who explodes. Jamie then returns to the present and finds Her friends and family are alive again. Though there are some minor changes to her timeline. She now has an older brother, and her name is Colette. Okay, let's talk about this. Nanatchka Khan, the director, promises us a tribute to those bright neon 80s and 80s-style meta-teen slasher horror movies, so the originals and the parody types that came later. Khan pastiched Totally Killer from fan favourites like Scream, Back to the Future, Freaky Friday, Freaky, as well as, I'm absolutely sure, Happy Death Day, and other films too. There are comedic hijinks, mostly based on looking back at how inappropriate the 80s were. I found the blind acceptance of the absurdity of time travel and Jamie's stupid cover story very funny. There's the twin killer confusion of Scream, and also a iconic mask. There's also how the same character can change from one period to another. That was very freaky and Freaky Friday. The time paradox was, of course, Back to the Future. That's actually stated in the script by Jamie. And Jamie's fringe jacket was very 80s hair metal, but also symbolic of Michael J. Fox's fringed cowboy shirt in the third film. And talking of fringed jackets, confession time, I had a fringed Brando-style leather biker jacket at university. The embarrassing fringe lasted about a month, and then I cut it off. Okay, back to the movie. Where was I? Totally Killer. I thought it was well acted, but despite the good acting, the effects were low budget. Though the main problem was that there was something off or too lax about how this movie was strung together. I think perhaps it could have been pacier. Some of the acting looks forced. It's not that the actors are bad, it just looks as if the cast could have done with more direction, and they were just fishing around for what to do. And the trailer, much like We Summon the Darkness from 2019, which I talked about in 403, promises more, much more colourful neon than we get. I'd have liked more night, more bright light, and more saturation. I think this and similar films are also influenced by Stranger Things, that whole 80s bright light neon mall nostalgia, and they don't quite get it right. I don't know if that's something to do with age. I remember the 80s quite well. I don't have that much nostalgia for it, but I certainly remember it. And I suppose the colours and the brightness was something that was good about the 80s, but also I think I was wearing more and more black during that time and looking less and less colourful. So I might have had a reaction against that at the time. Or maybe I was just being difficult. I don't know. But yeah, Totally Killer. Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's mildly amusing. The lead actress, Kiernan Shipka, really tries her best to carry this. I would have liked to see more of her relationship with her brilliant best friend, the inventor and the inventor's mother. I mean, there was enough, I suppose. I don't know. I was expecting more, just like We Summon the Darkness. The trailer promised so much, and yet the final thing, not so great. Whereas films like Happy Death Day, they promised not that much and delivered quite a lot. Under-promised, over-delivered. I've been talking about this enough, let's move on. Okay, I've now finished with movies, I'm going to talk about some television. Doctor Who, The Daleks in Colour. I wasn't sure whether I was going to watch this, but in the end I did. Let's talk about that now. As you'd know, because I've complained so many times during our classic Doctor Who revisit, started back in 2014 and still going, I don't like classic Doctor Who stories that are longer than four parts. So an overly long seven-parter chopped down to a more manageable 75 minutes, together with funkier music, or music brought to the fore a bit more, and clearer film and dialogue, were welcome. As for the colourisation, yeah, okay, that's the most important thing, let's talk about that. The saturated colour palette seemed suspiciously intense. Also, why was there such an abrupt switch from black and white to colour in the opening scene? The only reason I can think of that they did it that way was to show off the technology, maybe? It certainly didn't do the story any favours. I would have done something different. I would have picked a more artful transition point, and that's really obvious where that should be. There's a point at which Susan Foreman finds a colourful plant, and she says how colourful this plant is in contrast to everything else. Surely that would have been the place to do it. The camera could have focused in on the plant, then bloom the colourisation outwards from the focus of the flower. They didn't do that. I can't understand why they didn't do that. Okay, back to the Daleks in colour. Okay, obviously this is a cut-down version of the Daleks from 1963. This version, despite the editing and everything, isn't as fun as the Amicus film adaptation of the same Terry Nation story. That's Peter Cushing's Doctor Who and the Daleks, Dr. Dot Space Who and the Daleks, and its excellent sequel, Daleks Invasion Earth, 2150 AD, based on the Dalek Invasion of Earth. But I still think it was a nice treat for Doctor Who Day, nonetheless, and I did enjoy it, and I was looking forward to it, even though I've seen it before, even though I prefer the films. Yeah, it was okay. And something different to do on Doctor Who Day, rather than bring us the first David Tennant special. Yeah, it's something a bit different. I talked about the Daleks, the original black and white 1963 story in pod 34, and the Dalek Invasion of Earth in pod 39, both back in 2014. And by the way, no news to Whovians, but the latter, the Dalek Invasion of Earth, has probably the best speech in the whole series, and that is the soliloquy that includes the immortal lines spoken by the Doctor regarding his departing granddaughter, Susan Foreman. He says, "One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine." That's a great piece of writing. Okay, so that's Doctor Who, the Daleks in Colour. Let us move on to An Adventure in Space and Time. right after Doctor Who, The Daleks and Colour. I left the TV on for a bit and it went straight into the next programme, which was a repeat of An Adventure in Space and Time from 2013. This 10-year-old drama is about the conception of Doctor Who from the point of view of Verity Lambert and William Hartnell. I talked about watching it in Pod 18 from 2013, but the reason I'm bringing it up now is that this latest Doctor Who Day version ended with an addition to the original, and that was William Hartnell exchanging looks with Shuti Gatwa at the TARDIS console. It wasn't strictly necessary and transparently was a marketing promo. Despite all that, I still thought it was a touching piece of continuity. Okay, and here we are at last. Doctor Who the Star Beast. And by the way, before I get into this, you'll see that the show title is a mangled combination of several things that I've talked about in this episode. I'm sorry about that. It's become something of a tradition that in the multi-short review episodes of Captain Roy's, you know, the name of my podcast, too long to repeat, I pick obscure titles to badly encapsulate everything I'm talking about in an amusing manner. It's not often amusing, but that's the reason for that. Okay, enough waffle, back to The Star Beast. David Tennant and Catherine Tate star in this first 2023 special. It is story 301. If you're interested in the story timeline from An Unearthly Child to this, it was directed by Rachel Talalay, of whom I know nothing, written by returning showrunner Russell T Davies, from a story by 2000 AD's Pat Mills and Dave Gibbons. Amazing. It was broadcast on Saturday the 25th of November 2023 and follows Jodie Whittaker's final appearance as the Doctor in The Power of the Doctor from 2022, which we talked about in 461 last year. They decided to do the Daleks in Colour on Doctor Who Day, marking the 60th anniversary, and now we have the Star Beast, and it's a return to Saturday Doctor Who as well, which I really enjoy, so I'm glad they did that. Okay, the Star Beast, let's talk about the story. In it, the Doctor keeps accidentally bumping into Donna Noble. He takes a trip back to London, trying to figure out why he's regenerated into this form instead of the Shuti Gatwa form. And almost immediately keeps bumping into Donna and her family, her daughter and her husband and mother. And Wolf is mentioned as well, but not seen. The Doctor and the Nobles, while desperately trying not to trigger any of Donna's fatal memories, become involved with a suspiciously cute alien who crashes to Earth while pursued by sinister alien hunters. That is, hunters who are aliens and are also hunting aliens. So, alien hunters in both senses of the word, why am I explaining that? I cannot help being reminded of Alan Moore and Jim Baikie's Brit spin on E.T. called Skiz in 2000 AD, featuring a less cute, though very, very nice, pleasant alien. Here, that's reversed. in Skiz, the alien is not that cute. He looks like a furless kangaroo, so it can be a bit frightening looking. Here, not so much. The cute, soft and furry alien exterior disguises a psychopathic, megalomaniacal nature. There's absolutely no doubt that David Tennant is great in the role as the Doctor, though I am extremely dubious about roping him in to big up the Doctor between what should have been simply the Jodie to Shooty regeneration. I can't help feeling that it undermines and shows a lack of confidence in the first female and the first black Doctor. I suppose that's the most controversial thing I'll say. The story was extremely predictable. The alien design was cute to the point of smashing straight into sinister, uncanny valley, and you knew right from the start that this alien was up to no good. This alien was bad news. Soft, furry, Furby-like, or Gronk-like, if you're into 2000 AD exterior, or Mogwai-like exterior. There was something just wrong about his giant cute eyes, or her giant cute eyes, or its giant cute eyes. It's never made plain. As far as I remember, that's also a feature of the story, the gender of the alien, because of Donna's trans child. The story also didn't tie up any loose ends that needed tying, other than giving Donna a happier ending. As it was a bit sad that she could never remember her adventures with the Doctor, and if she ever did, she would die, and now that's resolved. In a very fait accompli manner that doesn't really make sense. Okay, those things aside, I found the episode aimed firmly at children to be entertaining, funny, and I loved that the Roundels have come back to the TARDIS. Those mysterious round panels in the interior of the TARDIS control room. I'm currently in the Peter Davison era of my revisit, so we still have Roundels. Though I will say that the huge size of the control room now lacks intimacy. It is just enormous, with ramps everywhere. Oh, I bet you it echoes a bit. And, okay, I don't really have anything else to say about the Starbees. Those comments about David Tennant being shoehorned in between Jodie and Shooty, well, that could apply to any of the specials this year. Just from an artistic standpoint, it is definitely aimed more at the children, which is okay. Doctor Who is a children's show. I don't feel it was a strong adventure, though. Like I said, right from the beginning, you knew exactly what was going to happen. After the Starbeast, the next two David Tennant specials will be on the 2nd and the 9th of December, followed by, finally, the 15th Doctor, Shooty Gutsworth's first episode on Christmas Day. I'm looking forward to that. Okay. That's it for the Starbeast. Let's move on to something else. And this is a follow-up and a bit of an apology for my piece of Hooniverse non-news in 511. In 511, I said that the news was that I had no news about the Hooniverse, but then went on to tell you about production documents and scripts archived on forgotten parts of the BBC website. Then, adding insult to injury, I didn't tell you where to find those documents. Ah, sorry about that. In other words, like one of those tabloids or news channels on a slow news day, I dropped a lot of nonsense non-news right in your lap. Let me remedy that now. The following pages have links to both production documents and scripts. This is not part of the Hooniverse, but stuff that has been there for years. Okay. First of all, we have classic Doctor Who production documents. That's Old Who Production Documents Archive, which are described by the Beeb as original production paperwork, known as Program as Broadcast, or P as B form, for every Doctor Who story. Those are available, well, the link will be in the show notes, but I'm not so vain that I think everyone's going to be reading my show notes. I'll quickly read out the link. www.bbc.co.uk/Doctor Who/classic/episode guide/PASB/. That's a lot of slashing. Okay, next we have the New Who scripts, and those are available from www.bbc.co.uk/writers/scripts/tv-drama/doctor-who/. Even more slashes. Oh, God. There's probably a lot more squirreled away about the nooks and crannies of the official Beeb site. And there's definitely more available unofficially outside the Beeb. But that should keep you going for a while. As far as the added archival documents that was mentioned during this whole Hooniverse promo that's been going on for weeks, I don't really know. That's as best as I can do, and that's a lot of stuff. So if you're a Whovian, there's a lot of stuff for you to look at. I am slightly into this stuff, but not as much as you might think, because, as I often say, I'm more interested in the story and the mythos of Doctor Who than I am about looking behind the scenes. Which reminds me of that new official Doctor Who podcast. Well, there's been a bit of brouhaha in the podcasting community, according to Reddit. I didn't log into Reddit, I just noticed on Reddit that people have been complaining about it. And I can understand that. I was thinking about this earlier today, and as a very, very, very long-time Doctor Who podcaster, not the oldest Doctor Who podcaster, but probably the most consistent, I don't know. This new podcast, I had a look at it on YouTube. The presenters seem likeable enough, but it is official, and everything they say is positive. I mean, they are not going to talk about the uncomfortable transition between Jodie and Shooty with David Tennant in the middle, simply because he is such a popular Doctor. They're just not going to talk about anything controversial at all. That being the case, there has to be some value to that podcast, and of course they do have access to people like Russell T. That's something. But really, a show like that should be a look behind the scenes. It should be a bit like that thing they did with New Who. I'm not sure if they still do that, where after each episode you have a look behind the scenes. Now that was video, not audio. But there's no reason why they can't every week interview someone from the cast and crew. I suppose that would be good. But having views of actual fans of the show, yeah, well, that's not it. And that's what podcasts, I think, should be. Okay, I've gone on long enough. In the after show, I just had one thing to tell you, and that's the return of the Revisit. If you need a reason to subscribe, if you haven't already done so, if you're just listening to this through a link that I posted on Twitter or Mastodon, I would suggest you subscribe, and then you can catch up with my classic Doctor Who Revisit going since 2014, and my new Hammer House of Horror Revisit show, which has been going on since Halloween this year. You should catch up now, and get ready for a continuation of those, because that's what I'll be doing next. I've finally caught up with all the stuff that I wanted to talk about, well, most of it anyway. And now I can get back to doing those revisits as well. That should be fun. Like I said earlier, I'm currently somewhere in Peter Davison's Doctor. And in Hammer House of Horror, I have reviewed up to the third episode. So it'll be the fourth episode of that 13 part series next. I haven't decided whether I'll be doing Classic Doctor Who or Hammer House of Horror in the very next episode. We'll just have to see how I feel. But as the traffic starts to pick up outside, and my voice starts to go, and my back starts to go, my bum starts to go because I've been sitting down, I think it's time to say goodbye and edit this and let you listen to it. I did put a call out for people to tell me what they thought about the Star Beast on Twitter, and no one responded. So that's as much of the mailbag as you're going to hear this week, which is fairly common lately, which makes me sad. And on that positive note, the show that you just listened to is made by me. My name is Roy Matur. I'm a writer. Matur is spelt M-A-T-H-U-R. You can find more about me or get in touch at roymatur.com. If you want to help, please review the show nicely and rate the show nicely on whatever platform you listen, though particularly Apple Podcasts. That's where it's most effective because of Apple's monopoly on podcasting. Recommend it to a friend or mortal enemy. I hope I said that with sufficient authority. Or click on the contact or support link on the website. And by support, yeah, as well as reviews and ratings and all that, please drop me a few quid. You can do that through Ko-fi and PayPal, so it remains completely anonymous. It's safe. It doesn't cost much. It's less than the price of a Starbucks coffee, which isn't saying much because a Starbucks coffee can be quite expensive, but as a one-off payment, it's a nice gesture. I don't have recurring payments or anything. These are just one-off, and it does help me. You would be surprised how expensive it is in time and equipment to keep this show going. Okay, that's it. Now it's time to say goodbye, so thanks for tuning in to Captain Roy's Rusty Rocket Radio Show, the UK geek science fiction, fantasy and horror podcast, episode 512. Let me just check that. Yep, 512. Taped on Monday, the 27th of November, 2023, and the time at the end of the show is an obscene 05:26:55. Thanks for listening. I really do appreciate that. And bye-bye for now. Bye! Roundels. Rondels? Roundels. Rondell?